to do. So let's start here with me and you. Gonna take a little time. Let's see what we can find. Oh, come on, walk with me, talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us here as we come your way every Saturday, normally from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, and we are also rebroadcast Sundays, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time at 8A2Zen.fm. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So we give you plenty of opportunity to hear our guest. We also encourage you to go to our guest's website or site. Sometimes they have more than one. And we link to at least one of them so that you can check out their information and all that good stuff. We're in 2013. It's amazing that we've made it that far by some reckonings. Some folks would have thought that it was all over. We were done as of December 21st, 2012. It was only my wedding anniversary. It was only number 10, so I don't see what the big deal is. We made it through. We survived, and here we are, and we are ready to do some serious damage to some of the myths and mysteries, if you will, surrounding the mind, attitude, reconstruction, and Jude Bijou is my guest. And Jude, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
It is my pleasure to be here.
Give me a little bit of a background. Many of our guests who come on, they've written one or more books. They have a website. They have videos on their website. They're doing all of this stuff. And you've probably been involved with, at least at one level or another, this whole business of attitude reconstruction for a number of years. So what qualifies you, if you will, to delve into the mind of man and figure out what ails us and how to fix it?
Well, it really started with my father. He was a behavioral child psychologist, a pioneer in the field, and from him I got that thing about that we can see a lot just by looking. So I had that viewpoint of like, what's going on out there and why am I not happy? And I wanted to be happy. Mm-hmm. And so then
don't
I
we all.
Exactly. But I really knew I didn't want to feel like this. And so that my journey took me to the East, and I got involved, thanks to George Harrison and the Beatles, with meditation from the East, and became a meditator and a teacher of meditation and so on. And then when that sort of ran its course, then it's like, well, and I need a career. And I became a psychotherapist. Mm. So for the last 30 years, I've been a psychotherapist right here in Santa Barbara.
I always get concerned when I have folks from the medical profession, especially mental health, who are dealing in more of the abstract aspects of humanity and mankind, that I'm going to end up getting psychoanalyzed. It's like, yeah, you are a crazy person, and you should be locked away. As long as I have an internet connection or a radio outlet, I'll be fine.
Exactly.
But it's the book that you've written, Attitude Reconstruction. I remember talking with one of my guests who is a regular contributor to this program, as she was going to. We were talking about, especially around Thanksgiving, we were talking about around the holidays, getting together with family. And I made the comment in a generic sense. I said, my attitude was, and I was playing the devil's advocate, I just can't do this. I can't be around my family. I can't give back to them love and joy because they're so bad. And that. And she says, stop. She says, you have to shift. It's the only way it's going to work. And I'm going to venture you would probably agree that's easier said than done sometimes.
It is easier said than done, but that's exactly the right thing to do. Because we know we're thinking critically about those people and making that whole story about why we don't need to deal with them. And we got to do the opposite. And that is really, we have to accept them. This is an acceptance issue. And it is easier said than done, but you can do it pretty systematically. It's one of my favorite phrases. People and things are the way they are, not the way I want them to be. So you can go down the list of all of those relatives and all of those events that you don't want to do, and you got to accept it. I've got to accept people are the way they are. My in-laws are the way they are, not the way I want them to be. They are the way they are. I've got calling all cars. That's the way they are. I've got to get it. That's the way they are. Hmm. Because by just really interrupting that wah, 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 and going with the truth, that is the way they are, we can get to a point of acceptance in pretty short amount of time so that then we're not surprised. I have to accept that they're going to be critical, that they're going to look around the house and find something that they don't like. That's the way they are. I don't have to get mad. I can just go, I'm surprised. That's what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. I accept it. That's the way they are. And I might need to speak up, but I have to then do it from a place of love because I accept them.
And the holidays do seem to be that period of time in which we tend to reflect on the foibles, from a critical standpoint, of our family, our relatives, those people we didn't get to choose to be around from birth on up. And that's why they say you can choose your family, but you cannot choose your relatives, i.e. you can create your own family. But you have to wait until you reach that age of accountability before you can start to build that. And that's kind of what I did when I was 19, 20. And I'm not saying that my family is a bad group of people to be around. I love them dearly, and we do have a lot of fun. Matter of fact, I have incredibly fun memories of Thanksgivings and Christmases when we would be sitting around the dinner table and we'd be exchanging gifts and we would be caroling in the neighborhoods and so on and so forth. And it wasn't quite Norman Rockwell, mind you, because I don't recall any Norman Rockwell paintings or drawings ever taking place in the desert. And I'm from Phoenix, Arizona, so needless to say, a lot of people don't have that. They can't look back and say that they had at least a fairly normal childhood. Most people are looking back and looking at some pretty bad stuff. And all right, so I can sit here and say, all right, my family is the way that they are. And this is now from an abstract, if you will, perspective, not from my own personal. But I had a horrendous childhood. Jude, my father beat me, and my mother criticized me, and my brothers picked on me, and my sisters this, and my classmates that, and the list goes on and on and on. And maybe even more atrocious and severe types of things happened. How do you expect me to make that shift when all of that stuff happened to me, and for whatever reason, I can't seem to get beyond that?
Well, for me, it goes to there are unexpressed emotions that are holding you stuck.
Okay.
Unexpressed sadness, anger, and fear. Those are the three emotions that cause us trouble. And I would say probably you need a safe environment mm-hmm. to really express those emotions, because emotions are just energy. It's a different way of looking at emotions. There's no thoughts there. It's just a feeling in the body.
Yeah.
Sadness feels one way, anger feels another way, and fear feels another way. If we allow ourselves to move that energy out of our body in a constructive way physically, so that might mean for the fear, we might need to shake and shiver like a dog at the vet
mm-hmm.
and move that energy out of the body
right.
because it was scary. A lot of times growing up, we had a lot of horrific, scary experiences that also made us feel angry. But we've got the fear, so we're going to need to shake and shiver and shake and shiver and shake and shiver so that we can start to tell ourselves, like, I can handle it now. I can handle it now. That happened then. I can handle it now.
So are you in agreement that we need to go back and sort of relive those moments and then change the ending, if you will, as some therapy has practiced, and this kind of goes to the core of the form, if you will, that therapy might take, whether it be with one-on-one with a psychotherapist or in personal growth and development programs LifeSpring or EST or any of the others that were around in the 70s and the 80s and so forth. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that you can either do it by yourself or with somebody supportive, whether it's a group or whether it's an
individual. But going back in time and trying to resurrect the story that caused you the pain.
No, it's more, I just know that I have a bucket of unexpressed anger.
Okay.
Or unexpressed fear or unexpressed
sadness. You don't need to go back and identify where it came from.
Because what will happen as you start to move that energy out of the body, that you might start get memories. Mm-hmm. It might start to come up, but it's not necessary. It's mostly that if I just really allow myself to move that energy out of my body, and it's not going to take one day because those are years and years of not being thought of well or being put down or whatever. But I need to move that energy out of my body. And the more I do, then I might start to go, oh, yeah, now I'm remembering what one Christmas. And then you can talk about that, but it could be about something that happened at work. It doesn't matter what we attach the anger to.
Okay.
We just have to move that out. And once we scoop it out, then we have more room for love.
I know for many years in the therapeutic realms, whether it be self-help on the bookstore shelves or going through therapy, there was the blaming of them, the parents, the siblings, the teachers, et cetera, especially the parents. And that then started to shift, that the parents in this, you know, in whatever the case might be, they did the best they could with what they had. It really wasn't their fault. And now what I'm hearing you say is that it doesn't matter whether they did the best they could or what they did was intentional. The fact of the matter is you're still dealing with this stuff, and it's, as you say, with your map mind, the mind to the map, which, by the way, is on the inside of the front and back covers. You have sadness, anger, and fear. Those are the core, the big three on the downside.
Exactly. And to just move those energies out of the body physically and constructively.
When you take a look at what's going on in the world today, regardless of what the stories are, regardless of what the news stories are, do you ever look at them from that standpoint?
Oh.
Okay, well, these people are exhibiting that sadness or fear or anger. And that's why there's this conflict going on, that they haven't dealt with those kinds of things.
We're all running around with so much anger. We got all those messages very young. As a child, we had a temper tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time we were two or three, we started to get messages about that wasn't going to fly at home.
Right.
I'll give you something to cry about. Or
yes,
all those
exactly.
kind of messages. And so we started to internalize all of those. We needed to find other outlets to channel that anger because we couldn't do it. We couldn't express it. We didn't have permission to express it. And this is what's happened, like all throughout the world. Wherever we have differences, we both have emotions. We think our way should be the way. That's the way it goes. We think that if everybody just did it our way, we wouldn't be a problem.
Oh, it would work for me.
Of course, of course. But it's just not the reality. The reality is that you have a viewpoint and I have a viewpoint, and we're going to have to go back to acceptance, mm-hmm. accept that we just see things differently and figure out what we're going to do.
Jude Bijou is my guest. Attitude Reconstruction is the title of the book. It's a multi-award winner, as a matter of fact. The Indie Excellence Finalist Book Awards and so forth. And I'm wondering, and it's not a big book. It's not something that needs to be thought of as a compendium that's going to take you a while to read through. I would think that this breaks down. I know we've talked about sadness, anger, and fear, the big three on the downside. But the big three on the upside are
joy, love, and peace. And those emotions are in opposite. So we move from sadness to joy. Mm-hmm. Instead of feeling down, we feel up. Mm-hmm. We go from anger, which is kill, strike out, right. That's that thing, to love, which is acceptance and bringing people close. Mm-hmm. And we go from fear, which is deer in the headlight agitation, to the opposite, which is peace, calm, present, alert. So the whole book is really exactly what you say. It's a very practical handbook. You can see it has tabs down the side. And so if I want to know about my thinking is driving me nuts, just go to that chapter. You don't have to read the whole book. You don't have to understand the whole approach. This will say, find your thoughts and contradict them. Whatever you're thinking over and over and over that's not serving you, pick one of these and start saying that over and over and over and over. And you will feel more joy, love, and peace and less of the other emotions.
And a lot of folks have been feeling a lot of fear. At least they were. Maybe they still are for all I know. But I know that as because this became a real thing. The transition point of 2012, December 21st of 2012, and there were movies and books and websites you could go to, and so and I chose not to have this particular woman on the program because it was too much of a downer. She was predicting that 97% of the Earth's population would be wiped out on December 21st due to the calamities that, you know, and then using the examples of history, thousands of years ago, the same thing happened to the dinosaurs and so on and so forth. And a lot of fear was generated over that. And now that we've gotten past it, now that we've seen the realities of what it, if you will, was, and even before, I mean, we're talking a year and a half to 2 years before, I was saying, yeah, this is going to be just like Y2K.
Exactly.
Trust me, it's going to be just like Y2K. And that's what happened. If somebody bought into that story, and was quite literally shivering in their boots, is the fear that they experienced just because the date has gone by negate the fear?
It might pacify it a little, but they'll find something else to channel the fear toward. Because it's just like with all the emotions. We look for reasons to stick it. We look for outside places that we're going to do with our emotions. So if it's not what if about this, it's going to be the next
shift
thing.
Shift it forward, yeah.
Because that's what fear does. Fear and peace are really time issues. And with fear, we have a lot of projection into the future based on the past and a lot of huge extrapolations. Whereas with peace, we're in the present. So when somebody is really agitated for a year or two about what's in the future, and they are just creating more and more of that fear within themselves. Because this is a really good point. These emotions are natural. We all have sadness, anger, and fear. We were born with that as a faculty. We all can express those emotions, so like joy, love, and peace. And some of us have more of that. We were born with more of sadness. And they would say, they have four kids and they're all different. Mm-hmm. One can be a hellion and just be angry at everything. Another can be fearful. Another can be happy. It doesn't really, it's not predictable. But we have this constitution which tells us how the lens that we're going to look at everything. So with somebody who has a lot of fear because they were born with it, then they're going to interpret a lot of stuff that goes on as being scary.
And this doesn't matter when you were born. In other words, this is not a new phenomenon that's just only occurred in the last, say, 10 or 20 or 30 years. This has been part of humanity since humanity's been here.
Exactly. Because attitude reconstruction is compatible, or one of the reasons is that it's compatible with Ayurveda, with the Vedic philosophy. Mm-hmm. And it says that there's these three forces, Kapha, Pitta, and Vata, and that it's a play of those. And these emotions are parallel to those constitutions and those elements, those basic elements. And those books were written 2,000 years ago. So 2,000 years ago, or 5,000 years, I'm not quite sure when it was actually done, people were dealing with these same forces. And we're just playing it out differently, and we've seen it a lot more. We're reading about it a lot more. We're hearing about it a lot more.
In spite of the fact that I have worked for news talk radio stations a better part of my career, I try not to listen to the news any more than I have to, because the stories are the same. You just change the names of the participants and the dates and the circumstances, if you will, but the incident is still basically the same. Down through history, you will find these same things happening. You know, it's not going to be exact, but nonetheless, it's still the same stuff. And I'm thinking, why do I need to watch this stuff? I know this stuff is going on. I'm not burying my head in the sand. I acknowledge the fact. It's like what you're, basically what you're saying. These six elements have been a part of man's psyche since man has walked the earth.
Exactly. And if we express the sadness, anger, and fear physically and constructively, we're going to hang out in joy, love, and peace a lot more. Right now, our joy, love, and peace quotient is pretty low because we have all of this anger that we haven't dealt with, and that's covering up that pure emotion of love. And we have all this fear that's going around in our body, and that's keeping us from being peaceful.
I know that the three, I'll call the big three on the downside.
Emotions.
Do a lot of physical damage to the human body. Certainly there is the anguish that the mind feels in terms of the emotions, but it undermines our health and well-being.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it correlates. Angry people might have more of those kind of blood disorders of, you know, high blood pressure, heart attack. Like, that's a lot of unexpressed anger.
Yeah.
That's underneath there. And again, for me, it's like we just weren't given permission. We weren't taught that it's okay to handle these emotions and have them, that they're part of life. We just have to handle them in a constructive way. Yeah. And that's what we weren't taught.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I myself, growing up in school, was not able to express how angry I was at the bullies in school in the same way that they expressed whatever it was. And my understanding is it is fear, because they feel inferior. And so in order to feel superior, they have to pick on other people who are weaker than them, perceived much weaker than them. When I was in school, the process that I was going through, as far as this is concerned, was expressed years later by my parents, who actually apologized for not being able to protect me. And when I think about that, I'm going, was it really your job? How were you going to do that? Even if you could, because they both, you know, my dad worked and my mother was doing other things as well. I mean, I just don't hold them responsible in that context. I mean, I appreciate the sentiment.
Absolutely.
I certainly do.
Absolutely.
But I don't know how they could have even accomplished that.
No.
As much as parents want to protect their children are going to face things that sometimes are unpleasant.
And they just have to be taught just exactly. Things will happen.
Yeah.
They're normal. And we have this safe place at the home where you can take care of those emotions. So you can come home and you can have a little temper tantrum. If you're a kid, you could be 8, 10, 12, 20, whatever. But you could go to this place and pound the heck out of phone books.
But if you did go home and you weren't allowed to vent to get that out, then that anger begins to build up.
Exactly. And we have to compensate. We have to do something instead. That's where we can get in. Maybe we start teasing other kids.
Yeah.
Or we could do any kind of where we start to withdraw and pull away. We have to compensate because we weren't given that permission to move that energy out of our body.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that as we travel forward in time, as human beings on this planet, that we are getting to a point in man's existence, in humanity's existence, we're starting to shift our attitudes. Yes, we as individuals need to deal with the sadness, anger, the fear, and start to incorporate more of the joy, the love, and the peace. But I think we're also starting to understand the interconnectedness of one another. And that this, if I'm understanding, this is not just about a few individuals. This is really about all of humanity and trying to get us to a place where we can build a better civilization and not constantly be concerned about the emotions that may crop up.
Exactly. So because as more and more individuals start handling their emotions in a responsible way, there's naturally more space to want to give and be able to receive because we're not so hunkered in by our resentments and our frustrations.
If we can, when we come back, can we talk a little bit about your journey, especially your Eastern journey?
Absolutely.
I'm Richard Dugan with Jude Bijou, and she has a book. It's called The Attitude Reconstruction, and we encourage you to stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan with New Paradigms for a New World.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Understanding is what it is about here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan with Jude Bijou, and you shared with us earlier in the program how your journey down the path that has brought you to attitude reconstruction in particular, but also psychotherapy, had to do with the teachings of the Far East and India in particular. That seems to be the path that a lot of us have taken. I know that for me, my first introduction was with Autobiography of a Yogi, as most of our listeners know. And I go back to that every so often, and I will re-listen to the book. I had an opportunity to interview the last living disciple and teacher of Paramahansa Yogananda. And that was an extraordinary interview. And even though I don't feel the compulsion to become an Eastern yogi or a devotee per se, there is much of that genre, if you will, that appeals to me. The teachings are just, they make so much sense. And I'm thinking, well, they make a lot of sense. Why isn't it that the stuff that I was taught before here in the West, why didn't it make any sense, you know?
Exactly.
But it didn't really resonate, I guess. I wasn't ready for it for whatever reason. Now I can go back to those stories of the West and I can understand those better. But tell me a little bit more about your journey through that particular part of, or that particular genre, if you will.
Well, it's exactly what you're saying. I wasn't finding the answers. I thought I should be given a book. This is how to be happy. But I couldn't.
Well, I got a book I can give you.
But yes, but it's like it doesn't work. I need somebody to say, hey, this is what you're missing.
Yeah.
And that's what really drove me to the East. It was like there's got to be more than what I'm feeling now.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I found, because one of the most beautiful things that I learned from the East is that it's about me. My job is to be inside myself. It's not about out there.
Yeah.
That's going to be trouble in terms of I have to start from this inner place. What's going on with me? Am I feeling good about myself? Do I see that no matter if I make mistakes, I'm still a good person? In essence, I am pure, or I am whole and complete, no matter what, how much money I have, or no matter what my occupation is, or what I look like, that I am something more than that. And it is something we just weren't taught. It's not a Western concept. It came from the East. But from that, from the meditation and from chanting and from study, I really got that that's one of the big pieces. It starts within ourselves.
Well, there were two things that were I became aware of. One thing I was told, and the other thing was more observational. I worked for the first 15 years of my career predominantly at a Christian radio station. And I remember sharing with some of the ministers and the pastors who came in and do programs that, you know, I was on my search. That's what I called it. I called it, I'm on my search. And they would always tell me, oh, but well, once you find Jesus, your search is over. And I'd say, well, actually, you know what? I found Jesus and my search has just begun. I know there's more out there. I know that there's much more. And the other aspect of it was because I didn't go down that path, when I left after 15 years, I was it was told to me by the general manager that I was a casualty of Christian radio. Somehow, it was too much. I couldn't handle it. And so I went off in these diverging paths. And I thought, that's a really strange way to put that. I've never considered myself that. Any more than as a born and raised Catholic, I have any animosity towards the church. I never left it. I just have not found that it serves me in the way that many people, very devout, feel that it does serve them, and more power to them. And I still have a great love for the church and its ritual and its traditions and its ceremony. I mean, to me, that's something that seems to be missing from our society as well, is ritual and ceremony.
Absolutely.
We have the traditions.
Yes.
We have the holidays.
Yes.
But we don't really have those. It's like in the Jewish tradition, you have the bar mitzvah for the boy at the age of 13. The problem in our country here in the West is when a Jewish boy has his bar mitzvah, even though he is now a man via that tradition, he's not treated as a man at age 13. So where's the manhood? And so that's when I began to ask the questions, so when does a man become a man? At 16, when he gets his learner permit, at 18, when he comes of age, when he's 21, he can drink, when he has his first sexual experience, when he gets married. Where is that moment when we grow up? Does any of this have to do with growing up in terms of dealing with reconstructing our own attitudes?
I think we grow up when we take responsibility for our own happiness, for our own thoughts, for our own behavior. Then we have choices. We have that conscious mind to go, I can go down this path or I can go down this path. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking responsibility for what I create or what happens. I'm putting in my energy in a given direction and I'm doing that. It's not because of outside forces, because this is with all of these holidays, take something, any of these, Christmas. Mm-hmm. We've lost the meaning of that. How much do we celebrate that?
Yeah.
It's about the gifts and what did you get? And it's been like that for years, but the emphasis is just not on the essence of whatever the holiday is. And that is what we're missing. I guess we've got so outward focused.
Mm-hmm.
And where it becomes, goes back to back in here. That's what does this holiday really mean to me? What is Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
And how am I going to celebrate that and convey that to those I love? That's where we can put energy. And then that's where we can create a new future.
Yeah. What are the spirit of the holidays? I think that's what's gotten lost. You know, people get tied up in the realities, the details of, say, the first Thanksgiving and what that was all about. And then they go off on some tangent about how one group was mistreated by another group. Yeah, okay, we know that happened. But what is the true spirit of Thanksgiving? And giving thanks. Being grateful for whatever it is that you're grateful for.
And I remember that as a child, probably around 10 or so, my father saying, all right, before we have the turkey, we're all going to talk about five things or whatever he said, three, that we're each grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to put some energy, he didn't use the word energy,
right,
but we're going to focus on that. So a simple ritual like that, not like, oh, I got to get through this assignment.
Yeah.
But like, let me take a few minutes to reflect.
Yeah.
Maybe write some notes. And like, this is what I want to share and say, this is what I'm thankful for. And this is what I'm grateful for. And this is that we kindle love by focusing on what we're grateful for.
It seems that, you know, we hear the phrase, especially around Christmas in particular, you know, how we should carry this throughout the year. You know, well, certainly, absolutely, wouldn't disagree at all. But at the same token, how important is it to have these days, and literally days, where we have the emphasis there? Because it is very difficult to do anything for a full year, let alone 6 months. They say that if you do something for 30 days, it becomes a part of your consciousness, and then you will continue to do that. But we have a hard enough time getting just past the one day.
That's why the way we make change is by little steps.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can say for the month of January, going back to, I'm just going to repeat 11 times every day, people and things are the way they are, not the way I want them to be. Or maybe 5 minutes. People and things are the way they are, not the way I want them to be. Mm-hmm. That's one little thing that I can do to bring what's the true meaning of Christmas into my everyday. Mm-hmm. Because it's not like, oh, I have to, you know, have 364 days of that Christmas spirit. Yeah. No, but I can be doing a little something. I can be reminding myself of what a good, beautiful human being that I am. Just a minute or two a day. Doesn't take a lot of time to be doing something that captures the spirit of those holidays within yourself, and then sharing that with, as appropriate, with those around you.
I've heard it said, this was a very interesting observation, and I had never really thought of it quite this way, although I knew intellectually, that the three wise men were bringing gifts to someone they did not know what they wanted. And I thought, that's really interesting. What if you went out and you were to get a gift, no matter what time of year it is, you were to get a gift for someone, but you didn't know who it was going to be? What would you get them? And I got to tell you, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, that's pretty generic stuff. You know, you can use it. It's very valuable stuff. But it's not something that is going to be turned down, especially in that day and age, is not going to be turned down by male or female. It's definitely going to be usable. It's something that anybody can use.
Well, one of the best things that you can give every day are appreciations.
Mm.
So I can each day tell my family members one thing that I really love about them,
mm-hmm.
or one thing that they did that I really appreciated.
Yeah.
So just that's a universal thing, frankincense and appreciations. We can give, because when we give something like an appreciation, we can feel it, especially if the other person stops, pauses long enough to receive what we say. Sometimes we need to say it more than once. We say the appreciation and they deflect it somewhere. We've got to say it again.
Yeah.
And then say it. I say up to 8 times.
Yeah.
If I really want to get a message, I'm going to have to stop all of, you know, wait until you go all of those planes that have to land in order for the runway to be clear.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because I will hear that too. And I have to catch myself sometimes when receiving appreciation. That I don't diminish it. And for that matter, just respond with a thank you. Thank you very much. Because any time that we go through the process of downplaying it, we're not only diminishing ourselves, but we're also, in a sense, doing a disservice to the person who's giving us those appreciations. Again, there's always the equation that's the universal, it's a universal law as far as I'm concerned, that for there to be a receiver, there must be a giver. And in order for there to be a giver, there must be a receiver. And if one part of that equation is missing, then the other part can't even exist. If you diminish in this case, because we're talking about appreciation, if you diminish that by saying, oh, no, that's not me, then you have taken away that giver's opportunity to give to you.
And that's, I say, you must say it again.
Yeah.
Because they're somewhere else and they have let it go by rather than receive.
Do you find a lot of people today, and especially in your practice, who are extremely self-deprecating?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And underneath that are our emotions. All these kind of what I call bad attitudes all come back to these buckets of unexpressed emotions. So self-deprecating means not only I feel bad about myself, so I know that there's sadness, because when we don't deal with our sadness, we tend to turn it into ourself. And the anger means that I'm going to be angry at myself. That's that self-deprecating. You didn't do that right, or you're a jerk. You can feel that anger. That's how it's said and how it's thought, to have anger there. So the way to break it up is to really inundate yourself with what's true and good about yourself, and allow yourself to go, oh no, and interrupt that. Mm-hmm. I am whole and complete. I am a good person. Whatever makes sense for you to say that is true about yourself.
Where do you think that this, I'm going to call it an epidemic because I'm running into more and more people than I ever have before, but where do you think this epidemic of self-loathing and deprecation has come from? Has our society really gotten that bad? Or is it just that the population is so large, it seems like it's that bad, but the percentage is still about the same as it was 500 years ago?
I think that's the case. We're more vocal about it these days, but I think that these problems have been going on for, you know, generations and generations and centuries and centuries.
And we keep teaching it to the offspring.
Exactly. Because we show them how we're going to compensate. We say, oh, well, let's be sarcastic instead. That might be the family. We're not going to express our anger directly and physically. We're not going to have that little tantrum like the child might have.
Yeah.
But what we're going to do is tease each other. So I'm not getting my anger out directly on something inanimate, like a old telephone book that I'm shredding up, or whatever I'm doing, stomping, or something real simple to move that energy. I'm taking it and being critical, or being twisting, or I'm out there on other people rather than saying, oh, it's my energy. If I will move it out, then I can be more the way I really want to be.
Yeah.
Because we don't want, self-loathing, it's not funny really after a couple of jokes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel good, and it doesn't feel good to hear it, and it doesn't feel good to be saying it.
Yeah.
Well, we want to feel whole. We want to feel good. That's the thing. And we can do it by really over and over and over and over putting in what's true. That's what it's like meditation, but instead of using a mantra where you don't know what the words or the syllables actually mean, you know what you're saying. You're saying, I am whole and complete. I am whole and complete. Over and over and over and over till we scream, and we get some breakthroughs. We get some to bring up all that, oh no, you aren't, oh, all of that stuff that we've learned. And it's like, no, I want to feel differently. I'm done with that.
Yeah.
That's not serving me. That's not making me feel like I'm living the life I want to live.
Well, it sounds to me like if there were one, that would be a good mantra to use in meditation. Just to repeat over and over and over again. And I know that we've talked from time to time about meditation and where it can take one, and even talked about the purposes thereof. And I know a lot of folks have their different ideas of it, centering oneself and so forth. And I think what really helped me when I heard an interesting definition, if you will, or explanation for the purpose, if you will, the overall purpose of meditation. And basically it was to still oneself to the point where one could hear that still small voice inside. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until then that I was able to let go of all of the other aspects of learning how to meditate, like quieting the mind. I am not a meditator, but I do know that if I were ever to get into the practice, that I'm not going to be focused on quieting the mind. I'm going to be opening up my inner ears and listening really, really hard through those other voices. And eventually they quiet down because they get annoyed that you're not listening to them.
Beautiful.
And then you can hear that voice.
Yes.
And then I'd heard it said that it's not enough just to hear the voice. You then have to be willing to follow the direction, the promptings, as it were. Sometimes that's easier said than done because it goes against our intellect.
Yes, against the mind that wants things to go the way we want them to go. Where this might be hard, it might be embarrassing to do whatever the inner ear, the inner heart is
right.
really saying. But it's like, that's what the commitment goes to, is listening and then, we'll say, obeying, which is the hard part. But if I just go, that's where my commitment is, then we see the benefits of it. But I see meditation as we've got a lot of agitation. You know, they have all these thoughts that come up. You try to quiet the mind, and, you know, the more you want to quiet it, the busier it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But that's agitation, yeah. again, falls into the fear,
yeah.
where there's so much going on in the body. It's like that's what goes with the shaking. If we allow ourselves to do what the body wants to do and shake like a dog at the vet, or like when we're in an auto accident, we shake and shiver with the body, then that not only the body settles down, but the mind settles down. So what we're wanting to do is use a pacifying thought, something like, everything will be all right. Everything's all right. Everything's all right. Whatever will bring us back to the present. Be here now. Breathe. Whatever's going to bring you back to the present.
Yeah.
Because that's where the peace is. And that's where we hear that small, still voice. It's from a peaceful place. We've pacified, moved beyond that agitation. And I say the quickest way is to shake it out of our body, just be loosey-goosey and laugh and wiggle, put on some music, get that energy out, because it feels so fabulous. Once we give ourselves permission, go dance.
Yeah.
And move that energy out, and then we really set ourselves up to be able to hear what's really going on so much more quickly.
I don't know if you have ever watched anybody recording sound on a computer, but you will notice that there's a line. On the left side of the line is the wave of the voices that were just recorded. On the right side of the line, maybe just a center line, and it's blank, basically. But it's that little white line, if you will, that right there. And I got to thinking of that in the context of what you said about the now, the here and the now.
Yes.
And the moment that that wave is created, the moment that you can see the wave movement from the on the left side of that white line, you're no longer in the now. And we're talking about a really small space. I mean, it's not even a hair's breadth.
It's the present.
Yeah. And I thought, wow, again, being able to put a visual representation to it.
That's a beautiful one. I would say those are thought waves. All of those are called thought waves.
Yeah.
And to go beyond the thought waves, that's the purpose of meditation. And in general, we want to be in the present. We've got to go beyond that by bringing our mind back to something pleasing, back to the present.
Mm-hmm. Back to the center.
Back to the self, back to
the
center. And then we can be there without the chatter. Right now, oh, I'm looking at the line. Oh, it's like we're back in our head.
Yeah,
rather than being with the spot of the present moment.
Yeah.
Being of that experience.
I would venture that there are many people who feel that they should be getting something out of meditation.
Yes, but we do get something out of it. When we meditate and we've quieted the mind, afterward we feel calmer. Mm-hmm. We feel quiet. We've settled down. So there is a benefit. There's long-term benefits, sure. But there are benefits that, because Maharishi, who was my first teacher, he said 20 minutes twice a day. That's all you can get. You still have time to get everything done.
Yeah.
Just
oh, yeah.
Take that little bit of time. But it can even be 10 minutes
yeah.
twice a day or 5 minutes once a day.
Mm-hmm.
But just to
something.
Take that little bit of time to allow yourself to let go of all those things that seem so important that are going for our attention and go, okay, where am I? Okay, breathe. Okay, smell the flowers that are blooming, or hear the birds, the sun. Come, all those things will bring you toward the present. And
yeah.
That's where peace resides. That's where the self resides.
I find it fascinating that as we continue our conversation here, and by the way, if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Jude Bijou, author of Attitude Reconstruction. I find it interesting that though, you know, questions may still come up, there is a part of me that's okay, we just stop here. Well, there's nothing more we can say. And yet it's almost as if you almost have to keep saying it. It's like what you were saying about, you know, affirming someone, you know, not just once, and especially if they become rather self-deprecating, you got to say it 5 or 6 or 8 times so that they'll eventually hear it. I do like the aspect of the airport runways too, by the way. That's very good. But it's almost as if, yeah, we just have to keep saying it and saying it over and over again. And sometimes it's more for our benefit than it is anybody else's.
Totally. It's for our benefit
yeah.
because we want to feel different, because then we can act from a yeah. different space.
These emotions that we're talking about, be they sadness, anger, fear, or joy, love, and peace. And we put those under the same category, correct? Joy,
yes.
love, and peace are also emotions.
They're also, because we only have 6. Everything goes back to these 6 emotions, because they're just physiology in the body. They're just yeah. energy, emotion, energy and motion. There's no words. The mind gives the words and the interpretation. But the feeling of the emotion is just pure energy. So we only have 6 of those energies. Everything, whatever the emotion, whatever the feelings we're feeling, they all go. Is it sadness, anger, fear, or a couple of those?
Yeah.
Or is it joy, love, and peace? But underneath all of those, the physiologies in our body are one of those 6.
So I would be curious as to what you think or feel that humanity's purpose is here on Earth.
Now you're getting into the big questions. Well, I think that it is to be established in yourself, and from that place to be really obeying what your calling is. Whatever you're called to do, whether it is a service job or whether it is a teaching job or no matter what, to do that with a full heart. I'm going to give something back. I got all of these gifts, especially us living here in Santa Barbara, mm-hmm. but we've been given so much because we don't, most of us don't have to be too concerned with food. There's usually enough, and
yeah.
we don't have war planes coming over we're not heading for the shelters and every hour or day or so on.
Mm-hmm.
We have so much that we are grateful for, or that we have.
And in that light, I know that a lot of folks are looking for a better way. The way in which we've been going as a civilization isn't working. It's just not working. This is what a lot of people are feeling these days. And okay, granted, I think we can admit that falls under the category of fear.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, it doesn't negate the concern that one has. And I've made this comment in numerous programs recently because it's only happened recently. I'm a great uncle. And my niece gave birth to a child to whom this process under which we live, she will inherit. She will go through the same thing unless something changes to where she can, from the get-go, start living her purpose, start doing that which she came here to do.
Well, it starts on an individual level. It's like for the tree to be green, all the leaves have to be green. And so for each person in each family or in each community, it's what can we do to really empower each person, give them, so we're acting from the side of this blueprint of doing things and saying things and so on that are going to increase the amount of joy, love, and peace that we feel, so that we start to fill ourselves up more of that than the sadness, anger, and fear, because we're dealing with those emotions. So if we're feeling that, then from there, we move out. So in my job, I can be nicer. In my job, I can be more steady. With my family members, when I go traveling, I can be sweeter and nicer. That it really starts, and now I have a job in the government, I can do that in a different way than everybody else is doing. I don't have to go for the nitpicking and so on. I can bring that in, but it's going to start at an individual level and go out from there, because that's the goal. How can we make the future better? But we have a lot, like you're talking about, there's a lot of fear because that we're of what are we leaving and what is happening with global warming.
Is there such a thing as justifiable fear?
Absolutely. It's a human emotion. Okay.
Well, I know that, but it's more along the lines of, if it's fear and it's something that's either we're in the past or the future, it's like, well, but we want to live in joy, peace, and love.
Well, but the thing is that fear is naturally evoked with threats to our survival.
Okay.
The bear is chasing us, our heart's going to race and all that all that physiology is going to change. That's just natural. So if I go and I get away from the bear, and then I allow my body to do what it wants to do. We all know those feelings where we're just shaking. It's just like so scary. But instead of like having the paramedics come and put blankets on us, to allow ourselves to let that energy out, then we have that ability to go, all right, it is scary. What's happening? And now what can I do about it? Because that's what we wanted from a peaceful way. There is going to be natural fear because of things are scary, and we have to deal with the emotion so that we can then take steps to handle it. So what are we going to do? Take little steps to solve those things that happen.
I guess I should have asked the question up front earlier in the program. Then there's nothing wrong with sadness, anger, or fear.
It's part of the human condition.
It's how we
don't express them. We don't allow ourselves. Because when I said right at the beginning about my father being a behavioral child psychologist, it's a natural approach. And that's what I really, one of the things I got from him. It's natural. It's not like do anything different. Because when I like teach communication, it's like, why weren't we taught these things? Yeah. And it's the same kind of thing. It's like we're just doing what's natural. We naturally shake and shiver when we're afraid. Allow ourselves to do it. We naturally get angry and tantrum. Find a safe way to move that energy. We naturally cry when we're sad about something, because it's normal. We're going to feel sadness for hurts and losses. So that's fine. Just cry, and then we won't start piling up all the things that are wrong with ourselves. Because that's what we do instead. I don't cry, and I turn it against myself. Oh, bad me. Oh, I can't do it. I'm small and little and helpless. That's not good. If we move the emotion, then we're going to stay in touch with the truth about ourselves. Well, I'm just feeling an emotion, and I move that out of my body, and now how can I act in ways that are going to increase the amount of joy, love, and peace in myself and in my world.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Jude Bijou. She's the author of Attitude Reconstruction. And if you're only listening to the radio broadcast, there is more. If you're only listening to the A to Zen broadcast, there is more. This interview continues on. We hope that you will stay attuned. Go to the archives page, richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, and listen to the entire interview. It's over an hour, and we encourage you to do that if you're not able to stay with us for any further than the radio program or A to Zen broadcast. Jude, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's been a pleasure having you in studio. It's always nice to have a guest in studio to see the face, and the energy is certainly so much different than just a phone call, although, you know, we don't have a problem with phone calls. Thank you again.
It has just been my pleasure. Thank you, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan. Once again, it is Attitude Reconstruction, and your website, I'm sure that you must have one.
I absolutely do. It's www.attitudereconstruction.com. And on the website, a person can take a survey to figure out what bad attitudes are causing them the most pain and figure out how to take care of them, as well as a lot of other information and videos and so on. www.attitudereconstruction.com.
Very good. And, of course, the book by the same name, Attitude Reconstruction. And Jude Bijou has been my guest. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at the same time, love to all.